is Bob Sorrentino from Italian Roots and Genealogy. And be sure to check us out on Facebook and our newsletter. And also we have an audio podcast. And our great sponsors, Your Dolce Vita, Italy Rooting, and Aviativo Casa. Especially if you're looking for a home in Italy, they're the place to go. Today I have a guest all the way from Australia. Not too often I get to do that. Lucas Diacri. So welcome, Lucas. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Bob. Thank you so much for having me on your podcast.
So everybody who's listening, interesting fact about Lucas and his sister, Josie. They have the Italian-Australian podcast.
That's right. We started relatively not too long ago, I suppose. It was back in August last year. So what's that, roughly 6 months ago. And we do weekly episodes. And I'm thinking some of your listeners are tuning in, Bob. You've been kind enough to let me post on your Facebook page, which I need to thank you for as well. It's always good to reach new people, especially over in the States. So I think some of these guys are listening, which is, yeah, it's really exciting to know that there's people from all over the diaspora that are hopefully tuning in.
And, you know, what's interesting about that is I think, you know, of course, America, that's where I get most of my listeners from. But I think Australia is the second, certainly no more than third, but I think Australians tuning in are number two. So that's interesting for me.
Very interesting. I think a lot of us have similar experiences and the similar stories. If anything, you guys are a little bit ahead of us, and maybe it's a bit of a sneak peek about how we sort of might be in a generation or two, with the sort of immigration starting a bit earlier in America compared to us in Australia, which is what I sort of, it's what I enjoy the most, really, because it gives me a little look into how we might be once we hit the third, fourth, fifth sort of generation.
So let's go there. So when did your family come and where are they from?
Okay, so my dad's family is from Reggio Calabria. My grandfather came about 18 months before my grandmother and the first child, which was my uncle. So my nonno come in 1952. They're from a little town called Cittadzano, which is Comune di Cosoleto, part of Reggio Calabria. And then, yeah, 18 months later, in 1953, my nonna came with my uncle Matt. And a little bit later on mum's side, that was 1960. They're from Rome. And my mum was born in Rome. So she was two. And yeah, she immigrated obviously with my two grandparents.
Yeah, and you know, that's pretty interesting because that's what I find. I guess Australia's maybe like 50 years behind America, because our big wave was obviously 1910 through like 1924 or so when they closed the states. And I think after World War II, it was very difficult to get here. So a lot of Italians went to South America and I guess Australia.
Yes, and a lot went to Canada as well. I think we're kind of on par with Canada in terms of, I think, how many. I think Canada might have slightly more, but in terms of percentage of population, we're pretty much on par with those guys. And I feel like it's around about the same time period that the Italians sort of left Italy for Canada compared to Australia as well. So I feel like we can relate pretty closely with those guys in Canada.
Yeah, and I think a lot of the migration to Australia was from Calabria, yeah?
Big time. We speak about this in our podcast a fair bit. We have a lot of Calabresi, a lot of Sicilians. Obviously, same as you guys in America, it's predominantly all southern. We do have definitely some pockets of immigrants from the north, but yeah, very much predominantly southern. I think in order would probably be, I mean, Australia's a big country, depending where you are. Definitely over in West Australia, I think it's mainly Calabresi, Sicilian, maybe Abruzzese next. But yeah, lots of people from the south.
And so why did your grandparents come?
Well, unfortunately, particularly down in Calabria, there wasn't, as well documented through your podcast, there wasn't much opportunity in terms of work. My family were farmers, didn't have too much happening really. So on the Dacqui side, they basically all left to go to either Northern Italy, Australia. Well, that was it really then. I mean, into France. I went up to the border of France, a town called Ventimiglia. I think some of my grandfather's siblings actually crossed over, went into France. Some stayed in the border town just on the Italian side. And I think he only had one sister who stayed. So I think there was five of them a majority of them kind of left just because of the lack of opportunity. On my mum's side, my grandfather was a good mechanic, so he actually came to Australia as like a skilled worker. So he was able to. I should have checked with mum before this. I think they may have paid for their tickets out. I'm not 100% sure, but I think he was kind of sought after to come to Australia being a mechanic. And obviously, there was a lot of work in that field, so their journey was probably a little bit easier knowing that they had work when he was going to arrive and that sort of thing. And he was able to get a good job sort of straight up, which I suppose just shows the difference a little bit sometimes being from central or north compared to the southerners, I think.
Yeah, no, I think you're right about that. And in America, my grandparents and they were older because my parents were on the younger side of the family, so my grandparents were pretty old at the time, when they were talking and stuff like that. But did they talk about home life in Italy and what it was like, pre-war, after war, those kinds of things?
Yeah, for sure. My nonno on the Calabresi side, he was a great storyteller, so he loved to tell all the stories. You had to work out which ones were true and which ones were maybe fictionalized a fair bit, but they say never let the truth get in the way of a good story. So it was always great listening anyway. But he would speak a lot about Italy, and he went back heaps of times. I think maybe 10 times or so. He loved going back because he come out and he didn't have any other family in Australia, so he's immigrated with my nonna and my uncle, who's three, but none of his family, none of the Dacquies at all came. So he had obviously his in-laws and a lot of family from my grandmother came, so his wife's family, which was, something for him. But his own actual family, like I said, they all stayed back in Calabria or they sort of left and went somewhere else. So he would often go back and visit. He even got the boat back, I think, in the late 60s. They weren't flying yet, so he was that keen to sort of get back and see his family and parents and stuff. He took the ship back and back again. So it's a
That
long
must
journey. It was a 28-day journey.
I can only imagine what that boat
Yeah.
ride must have been like. So, give us a flavor of what he would talk about.
Oh, I mean, he, to be honest, I don't even think he minded the boat so much. He was really, sort of the life of the party sort of type person and very jovial, very social sort of person, loved life. He lived healthily up until he was 95 and a half. He passed away in 2020. And yeah, he would just tell lots of stories about just the family environment. And he obviously had a big family back in Italy and extended family and all the cousins and all his friends and just the way life was tough. But I think that real family kind of environment and how they lived, and what it's like over there, especially in southern Italy. I think he probably always missed that a little bit when he came to Australia. I mean, he was 27 when he came. But yeah, he did have fond memories, even though obviously they were sort of suffering down there a little bit in terms of industry and jobs and opportunities.
Yeah, well, that's great. 95 and a half. That's fantastic. And so you got to know him pretty well then.
Very lucky, yeah. I mean, I'm 36, so what was I about? I think 33 when he's passed. And the last 5 years of his life, he moved into my parents' place because obviously he's getting a little bit older. So I'd see him almost every day. We spent a lot of time with him, which is, yeah, very, very special.
Yeah, no, it's great to have that connection. And so did they And I'm sure they did, but did they bring a lot of the social kind of aspects or traditions with them?
Yeah, definitely. I think what my take is that the southern Italians compared to, because I've got a pretty good view here because mum's family is central to north, really. If you go back, I'm not sure if we'll talk later in the podcast, but mum's family is a little bit spread out as well. So her, both mum and her parents were born in Rome, but then from there they sort of spread out. So her dad's family is actually from Le Marche, and her mum's family got a couple of semi roadblocks there, what we call the roadblocks. Not 100% sure on some of the origins further, but we think they're from outside of Rome and right up north and that sort of thing. But the difference I've seen is the southerners really, well, definitely over here, seem to keep their traditions quite tight, and weren't so fussed about learning too much English and assimilating. And they kind of, because they came in droves, they were able to keep their communities together. And even though it wasn't my nonno's direct family, there was a lot of other people from his town and his area. So they kind of really kept the cultures and the things they would do and spend their time, where I think the central Italians and northern Italians, because they came in much thinner numbers and were really outnumbered, whether it was to the Australians or to the other immigrants or southern Italians, they seemed to lose the cultures a bit faster and assimilate a bit more. I think.
And that's
That
true.
makes
I
sense.
think most of the immigrants to America were, like you said, Calabria, Sicily, Puglia, Campania, and from the north, there's some, but certainly not as many. And so I think it's the same kind of thing. Like I said, I think it's, probably just a 50-year difference in where they go. So, were they accepted by the Australians when they first got there?
We'll be right back.
Italian Roots and Genealogy is proudly sponsored by Your Dolce Vita and Dawn Matera, connecting people to their purpose in life and continuing their legacy. For more information, contact Dawn at www.yourdolcevita.com.
Yes and no, I suppose. I mean, there was definitely racism even through into my days when I was younger, maybe going back, say, roughly 20 years ago, myself playing sport at junior levels and in school, and there's like still some name callings and that sort of stuff. So yeah, and I suppose as the years have gone on, it's eased up and we're sort of more one now. But back in those days, there definitely was some rough times, and I think Italians always were able to get themselves in though because they were such hard workers, really good, honest, hardworking people. So whether there was a little bit of negativity, whatever the word may have been, I think that dropped off fairly easy because I feel like most of the Australian people accepted them quite fast when they sort of seen how hard they worked and how much they wanted to contribute to the new country and that sort of thing. However, some people still maybe never really accepted them and liked them, and it's just the way it is.
Yeah, see, for my generation here, growing up in the 50s and 60s, it wasn't so bad. And there were so many of us, because of the baby boom. Where my grandparents lived, everybody was Italian. So it didn't matter. And where I grew up in an area that was settled by the Germans, I guess, in the late 1800s, mid to late 1800s, and then there were some Irish there. But it was kind of a real melting pot. And then, my classes in school probably half were Italian. So, I never really experienced that much. But the one thing, back then, if somebody would ask you, what are you? You would say Italian. Now we say Italian American, but we always just said Italian when somebody asked.
Well, we're still definitely at that stage. I mean, in Australia, we are Italian. No one really says Italian Australian. It's maybe starting to come in now a little bit, and we're highlighting the differences through things like our podcast and your podcast and things where you really look at it. And I've heard you speak on yours, and it's kind of like we're not really Italian. We're either Italian American or we're Italian Australian, or we're Italian with Australian with Italian background, all that sort of stuff. So we're the same here. Generally, someone will ask someone like myself whether you've even got parents born in Italy, and you just say Italian even though you're born here. So
Yeah. Now, have you gone back? Have you been able to go back
Yeah,
yet?
I'm very lucky. I've spent a lot of time there. I think I've done four separate trips. Haven't been for a little while though. My last trip was 2016, and like everybody who was planning to go back, it kind of got pushed back. And I'm actually I need to mention I'm in a bit of a time warp with your podcast at the moment, Bob, because since you reached out to line up this one, I've just started listening to the whole stack of them. But I'm up to about December 2020, so I've listened to your first 40 odd. So I'm still reliving
Oh,
all the COVID things and
you've heard the bad ones then.
Yeah, well, no, they're great. When I find a podcast that I like, I just listen to it over and over. So, yeah, I started from the start. I've listened to a few of the recent ones as well, just to sort of get a bit of a recent flavor. But yeah, I'm going back from the start and just listening through. So I'm reliving all the lockdowns and how you were supposed to go and that got put back. And I know now that you have been because I've listened obviously to a couple of the recent ones and obviously your episode that you did on the Italian American podcast. I've listened to that one, so I know that you finally got to go and do your trip, which is awesome. But yes, no, I have been four separate times. And all roughly for about a month. I think one trip might have been a little bit shorter, but we've got so much family there. So on mum's side, like I said, she's immigrated as a child. She came with nobody. So my grandparents and my mum came. No one else came, except for, sorry, my mum had one uncle who came, but he passed before I was born. But basically, the whole family's back over there. So they're more like second cousins and the great aunties and uncles and that sort of thing. But you know what it's like there. You go there and it's like you're first cousins and first aunties, and there's no second this and that. It's just full on. And same as on dad's side, there's a lot of family still there as well. So I've been lucky to spend a lot of time in Italy and kind of do not every region and everywhere, but majority north to south. There's still a few places I would love to see, especially now that I've dug further into my ancestry since my last trip and I realize there's a few towns that we're potentially from I wouldn't mind to check out. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, we've never really done the north. I was in Milan for work a couple of times many years ago. But we said if we go again, because we've done the hometowns and stuff like that. So, you know, we probably want to go to Florence and Venice and some of those places, which, you know, which we hadn't been before. But I'm sure they're thrilled to see you when you do go back. Yeah.
Yeah, they love it because not too many of them have visited Australia because number one, I mean, I'm supposed it's the same flight for us to fly there, but they just always say the flight's too long. They always just say,
"Yeah,
no,
how
it's
long
a
is
long
the
time."
flight? I was going to ask.
The flight is, I mean, you're flying and in transit and whatnot for almost a day. Like it's pretty much 24 hours. I think now just recently there's a few direct ones and a few things, but it is a long flight. But I mean, it's so worth it once you're there. So yeah, most of them just say the flight's too long, and then none of them speak English. So we've had a couple come and it's been hard for them to get through the airports and stuff. And it's a lot easier for us to probably pack up and head over there. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm totally lost going through the airport in Rome.
It's pretty crazy.
I found, for anybody listening, I've been trying to learn Italian. I can't tell you how many times I tried, and I tried everything, but now I'm using Duolingo, which
I've heard
seems
that's great.
to be working
Yes.
Very, very well. Yeah, what I like about it is, it's pretty fast paced, unlike Rosetta Stone or some of the other ones. And I think they reinforce the words better, because I would always get lost with some of the conjugating of verbs. And people told me it doesn't matter when you're they'll figure it out just like we do. It's pretty good because what they do is they make you speak. They make you write, they make you translate. So as they're going through it, it's I'm catching on quicker than I did with anything else. So
that's good.
I think I could find my way through the airport, ask for directions now and
yeah.
So, that kind of stuff. But you're fluent, yeah?
Yeah, well, I'm lucky, particularly lucky because mum's side being from Rome, which like I said, there's not too many central/northern Italians around in Australia. Like obviously there is some, but as mentioned earlier in the episode, there's a lot of southern. So lots of my mates, actually majority, they're all from the southern, whether they're Calabrese or maybe they're mixed, they're half Calabrese, half Abruzzese, all these sorts of things. And they might not use that and it just doesn't really work. So having mum's family from Rome and they speak standard Italian, I've been really lucky to learn that. Obviously learning the dialect as well. My grandfather would only speak to me in his dialect. So my grandmother on the Calabrese side passed before I was born, which is really sad. Never got to meet her. She passed when Dad was around about 10. And my nonna was left with five young children. I think they were all roughly, 15 to 2 or 3. So he never wanted to remarry or do anything. Obviously, as you know, plenty of times I'll sort of organize them to marry someone else. And he just didn't want to do that. So he just raised the children by himself, super hard worker. But I suppose, never learned any English, just working in the fields, doing all this really hard, backbreaking work. So it was good for me because I got to learn the dialect. But I'd say semi-fluent in speaking the dialect purely because I don't speak with as many people. And like he always would say to me, don't stress too much about speaking how I speak because you're going to even go into different parts of Calabria. They won't understand you. You're going to go outside of Calabria. No one's going to understand you. So he was sort of happy for me to speak with him in Italian. He was pretty forward thinking in that regard. So I kind of focused more on standard Italian through mum and the grandparents on that side. And mum and dad also had an Italian restaurant, a very well-known Italian restaurant in our area where I worked for a long time. They had it for 30 odd years. And we had a lot of Italian staff, a lot of Italian customers. My grandmother worked in the kitchen, so I was speaking Italian every day with the co-workers. And I was lucky to learn it.
So I was going to ask you about the food. So you actually had the restaurant. That's cool.
Yeah,
because
mom and dad did. Yes,
and you've probably heard. People are confused when they go to Italy and they can't get fettuccine Alfredo because it doesn't exist there.
Yeah.
So did
it's
they
one
make
of those ones.
Did they cook
yeah.
did they cook Australian Italian food or did they cook real Italian food?
A little bit to an extent. I think Josie and I have tried to break this down in one of our episodes already. It's strange how it kind of happened because the people who we had working in the kitchen, we had like other Italian-born people, and my dad, who's born here, but very Italian upbringing, and my grandmother. But it was almost like it just kind of happened instantly because some of the ingredients were different, and I'm not sure if they've seen another Italian restaurant was doing this sort of way. They just kind of sort of tried to cater, I suppose, for maybe some of the Australian people as well. But I think it was definitely, say, three quarters Italian-Italian and a little bit Italian-Australian, but majority. I think over here, we haven't branched off too much to a full subculture, definitely not in regards to food. Most Italian places over here, you're getting food that's pretty similar to Italy overall.
Oh, that's cool. My wife made the mistake of asking for cheese on her seafood dish. He won't even bring it.
Well, that's an example. I think we used to put it on pretty much everything, but the menu stated it. So that's maybe one thing you can say it's slightly like Australianized. I'm pretty sure from memory we would just, that would go across the board and all the dishes. So little things like that, I suppose, we do over
They
here. And
said
that
to
definitely
me,
doesn't fly there.
well, you Americans, you make your sauce with ketchup. And I was like, no, we're not that So let's talk a little bit about the podcast. Why did you start it?
Well, as you know, there's the Italian American podcast, which you featured on as well, which was a great episode as well. So basically, I started listening to that a couple of years ago, and just got hooked on it. Just really, really just, I really related to it, I suppose, because so many of the things they were speaking about, similar to your podcast, we have a very similar experience over here in Australia. Slightly different, of course, but the episodes, really resonated with me. So I got my sister Josie to listen, not together so much, but to the episodes. And then I'll give her a phone call and we'll sort of have a little mini episode and discuss what they spoke about and the differences over here. We're doing all this stuff. And I was mucking around at the start because we didn't have any experience in this. And I said, Josie, why don't we try and do it? And she said, nah, no one's going to listen to us and we don't know how to do it and all this sort of stuff. So I got in contact with the guys over there and they were just super encouraging. And we had a few video chats with John, and they sort of said, "Look, I think you guys would be good. There's nothing like this in Australia. Why don't you guys come on, be a guest on our show? That can sort of like help you guys launch." So we did an episode with them, and then we just started doing weekly episodes. And so far, it's blown us away. We get a lot of really positive feedback. We have a lot of listeners. We get a lot of really nice emails sent in every week, and it's really spurring us to continue because, as you know, it is a little bit of work. But we feel like it's really important because we're kind of at that cusp now in Australia where the languages are starting to be lost. Some of the traditions are starting to die off. It's a bit of a fork in the road, I suppose, which way we're going to go with the culture. We're really hoping to keep it strong. So.
Yeah, that's super. And that's, certainly some of the things I'm trying to do here because, now we're into the fourth and fifth and probably close to the sixth generation. So, everything is starting to disappear and they didn't grow up with all the aunts and uncles around the table and things like that. What kind of guests do you have and how do you find them? Because I know how I find them. I'm interested on how you find your guests.
So we made a big list at the very start, and I showed John from the Italian American podcast, and he said, "Yeah, I reckon you have a lot of success with those sort of ideas." And a lot of them, the first probably dozen or so, a lot of them was just Josie and I breaking down topics. So certain things, lighthearted ones like the Italian Australian food and the differences, episodes like where we sort of feel we're at in terms of the language and the culture and traditions overall, these sorts of things. What else did we break down? We broke down episodes about visiting Italy, these sort of generic ones, but are still interesting enough to speak about. Then we just saw some people who we didn't know whether they'd be interested or not because they're real busy performing sort of comedians and musicians and that sort of thing. But we found straight away everyone was so lovely and so interested to speak with us and help us on this journey. So we've had a few comedians, a few musicians on, a few well-known people just in the Italian community over here in Western Australia. We had Dad on for an episode. We had Mum for an episode. We did an episode with them where they just got back from their trip to Italy. We also had one of our other cousins do an episode. All these people that have done different sort of things. So it's every episode's got its own flavor. And basically, the way we do it is just reach out via email, Instagram, just send a message and ask if they want to be part of the show. And so far, everyone said yes. We've got a few big names that are coming on that we're really excited as well. And we haven't had too many knockbacks, really. Most people have been amazing with their time.
Yeah, no, the same thing, and I've had the same experience. Most people are happy to do it, and there were really some great people. Same thing. I've had a couple of comedians on. I found a lot of authors. Sometimes I'll just go out and find some authors, and there's some authors who wrote some great books about the Italian American experience or Italy or things like that. So they're always fun to have on. And then like yesterday, every once in a while, I do a live show, which is a lot of fun. The live shows are the best.
I didn't tune in, but I did see that you were doing that. I'll definitely try and catch one for sure.
Yeah, that was a good one because we had a bunch of people on, and it was certainly a lot of fun. So now, as a semi bad guitar player, you're in the music business, right?
Yeah, so I'm really lucky to do music as a full-time thing at the moment, which kind of happened as a little bit of an accident. I've always done music my whole life since I've been in school, and so I worked in the restaurant, as mentioned. The parents had the Italian restaurant. I worked there out of school, and I always did music on the side. So, but I was doing a lot more private events and weddings and functions and that sort of thing. I wasn't trying to break into it as a full-time job or really try and get into the scene. I recorded two independent albums just for fun, more or less. And this is before Spotify was even around and all these things like that, where people would actually still buy CDs, and it's quite sort of easy to sell the CDs and that sort of thing. I've done a recent album now, which is a lot harder because not many people listen to CDs anymore. It's all online. So, I mean, all my stuff's on Spotify and YouTube and everywhere as well. But yeah, we closed the family business down about 6 years ago, I think it was. And it was around about then I slowly started to get the music a bit more. I really just felt like I needed to do a bit more with my music, and I had all these new songs that I wanted to record and people to hear. So I was lucky enough just to try and sort of get my name out there enough around our sort of area of Western Australia to now be sort of like a semi-touring musician. When I say touring, it's going around sort of a 3 hour radius from where I live. There's a lot, it's a beautiful part of the world. There's a lot of beautiful breweries and wineries and vineyards and like beautiful, hotels and bars and all these sort of venues that I'm lucky enough to bounce around and do enough gigs out to sustain myself, which is awesome. So.
Well, that's great that you could sustain yourself. I couldn't sustain myself. We had a little band, and we were all working full time and everything like that. So it was more of a kind of fun thing to do, but we had never had any intention of playing any place. And we were just practicing one day, and I said, "Yeah, we should give it a try. There's a bar down the block." And we went there, and the owner said, "I just canceled somebody because they stink. So if you want to try, you don't come." And so we had no idea what we were doing. We could barely figure out how to hook up all the equipment and everything like that. But it turned out all right. And I guess we did for a few years. And
Oh, awesome.
my friend Brian and I wrote a few songs, and Brian's fantastic. I could come up with some lyrics, and I would say to Brian, "Brian, I think this should be a rockabilly song," and he'd make it a rockabilly song. Or I would say, "This sounds like, could be a blues song." And he's a fantastic guitar player, so he could just knock out a lead. The thing that would throw us though is, we'd be playing live, and all of a sudden he'd go into a lead that we never heard before.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So do you
That's a
you
good
so
thing about it. You can
you're you
improvise a little bit.
Yeah, do you do a solo act, or you play with a band, or both, or?
No, I'm just solo. Just myself. So I play a lot of what you call like the stomp box. So you're using sort of drum with your foot, and I play a lot of the harmonica, and just acoustic guitar. So it's fairly chill, acoustic folk rock, a little bit of acoustic reggae tones, just mellow sort of stuff overall. But when you listen to the albums and recordings that I've done, obviously you can beef it up a bit more in the studio. So there's some lead guitar, there's bass guitar, there's proper drums, piano, there's all sorts of other instruments. But when I've recorded, I've never wanted to make it sound too far off if someone's going to come to a gig and see me perform live, if that makes sense. You don't want to throw in too many backing vocals and too many harmonies, and you can really make it sound really big production, but I sort of rather it be not too different to when someone sees me, if that makes sense. I feel like that's a better way to go as a solo performer.
No, I know exactly what you mean. And
Yeah.
I'll have to send you a link to my friend Nick, who taught me how to play. And
Yeah, for sure.
he's done both, but he mostly does solo stuff. But he could sit in the room for 3 hours and play the whole Beatles catalog by himself and
All
sing
right.
it and everything. I don't know how he does it.
Oh.
And
You
he
get
could
some
play
guys like that.
and he could play and sing Sympathy for the Devil, which, if you listen to it and you ever try, it's very difficult to do that song, play the
Yeah.
guitar and sing that song, because it's a different, it's like an offbeat kind of thing,
Yeah, yeah.
so it's
Yeah, nice.
pretty interesting to watch him play that and sing that. But yeah, that's great. That's fantastic. And yes, we'll certainly put the links out there for your music and stuff so people can
No, I
find that.
appreciate it.
It's tough to make a living that way, I guess, huh?
Yeah, I mean, for me, like I said, it happened like a bit of an accident, really, because I had a period of time when I didn't do anything with my music because I was in between jobs. Like when we closed down the family business, and then it's the first time ever I got another job. So I went and worked in hospitality still, but at a different venue, obviously. And yeah, it was a little bit of a weird time period because I'd only ever worked for mum and dad and done the family thing. So I kind of just put all my energy into that, and yeah, was focusing on that. And then I didn't do anything with the music for a couple of years, and then I realized how much I missed it. And then I did one gig, and then it was like something just, the fire just really went alight again, and I just wanted to do it and do it. So I kind of almost stopped that job to get a different job that would allow me to do more with the music. And I was happy kind of doing 50-50. So I was doing a couple of gigs here and there. Most weekends, I was doing at least one gig and working as well. And then that just kind of led from one to two, two to three. Then all of a sudden, it was just gigs everywhere. So I was able to throw on the job and just focus on the music. And then obviously had more time to record and write, which led to the last album, which came out in July last year. And so far, I'm just running with it. I'm not looking too far ahead. But yeah, I'll just keep going with it while I'm getting a lot of interest in the areas around where I live and see what happens, further down the track.
Oh, that's great. That's great. And we certainly hope it all works out. So,
Thank you.
what advice would you give to, whether they're in America or whether they're in Australia or any place else for that matter, to young people who want to find their roots?
Italian roots, sorry, we're talking about.
Yeah, to young people who want to find their
Going back to
Italian
the
roots.
genealogy. Well, obviously, best thing ever is to go and sit with the oldest people in your family that you can. But as I've learned, whatever they say, document it all. But you need to take it with, a bit of caution, because if I took every bit of information I've been told, even if it's your grandparents telling you something, often it's not quite true, or it's slightly skewed for whatever reason, whether it's their memory or, you just got to be careful. But obviously, asking people, I still feel like, is the best. It's a lot, as easier than trying to go through the Antonati and find things that way. If you can speak to the people before they pass and that sort of thing, definitely do that. If you have family in Italy that you're able to contact and speak with, I know sometimes there's obviously a language barrier, but that's also a great way, because as on your podcast has mentioned several times, how a lot of these guys don't do the DNA and they don't do so many family trees. They know in the back of their mind, they know a lot of it. So if you can get it in contact with some of these guys, they might have a wealth of information to share with you as well. And then obviously after that, it's things like the Antonati and Family Search. And we're lucky these days that it's a lot easier with the internet and people you can reach out to with online and that type of thing.
Yeah, that's super. That's fantastic. So before we go, where could people find your podcast and where can they find your music?
Yeah, so both are similar for music. Lucas Daquin Music on Instagram, on Facebook. It's on YouTube, Spotify, basically anywhere on the internet. They can search me, Lucas Daquin Music. And the podcast is similar as well. I think the podcast streams everywhere you can get podcasts. I'm pretty sure it will come out. The main ones people listen on is obviously Apple and Spotify, or our website at the Italian Australian Podcast. But yeah, Italian Australian Podcast. We're on Instagram. We're on Facebook. But yeah, if you can just type that in a generic search, and it should be the first one that pops up.
Fantastic. That's great. And tell Josie we missed her. Well, next time we'll make sure she's
Yeah, well,
able to get on.
we're going to have you, Bob, on our podcast for sure, and we'd love you to speak about your genealogy research and give some tips to all the guys over here in Australia, and you can share your amazing story on what you've done. So we'll definitely line that up for later in the year as well, so you can catch up with Josie then.
All right, that's fantastic. Thanks again.